The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Hey, welcome back. I'm going to be serving you in many different ways today. Well, in the second half of the show, I'm going to help you become, if you ever had a desire to work at Disney, I'm going to help you with your terminology. I'm going to take you through a glossary of terms. I'm going to play a couple of inspiring videos for you so that I can help you get woke, so that if you're trying to communicate effectively in the modern world and step out of your Neanderthal medieval-like thinking and communication style, Steve Noble is your guy, okay? So I'm going to help you out today. But first, we're going to talk about Elon Musk, who just launched some guys into space not that long ago, just earlier today. So back up to the International Space Station, taking up four astronauts there today, Elon Musk. And then he just did a grand opening, I think, last night down in Texas, of a new facility where he's going to be building their crazy-looking, spaceship-looking truck, their Tesla truck, the space truck or whatever he calls it. It's really funky. And then Elon, we talked about this last week, buying up about a 9% stake in Twitter, 9.2%, which cost him about $3 billion. And that happened. And then, bada bing, bada boom, and I think this was pretty smart on Twitter's part, they ask him to join the board. So now Elon Musk, who's been critical of Twitter and Twitter's policies and their procedures, buys up, becomes the single biggest share owner, and then he gets on the board. So the question in the article written by my buddy Brooke Medina at World Magazine, as well as the John Locke Foundation here in North Carolina: can Elon Musk save social media? What a great question. What a great article. I shared it earlier this week. All right, Brooke, so I'm going to throw it to you. You're out there in beautiful, sunny California. First of all, what are you doing in California? Thanks for calling in. It's great to hear from you. And then we'll talk about Elon.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Steve. It is always good to join you. And it's even fun to join you from California. I'm looking out my hotel room window right now at palm trees swaying in the wind, but the heat is sweltering. I'm in Los Angeles at a chief marketing officer summit. And so I have been working with other like-minded communications professionals across the world, talking about ways in which we can advance liberty. And, you know, we are seeing a rise in what I would call illiberalism. And what I mean by that is countries and governments that are not giving liberty to their citizens, and they're clamping down. The world is actually trending less free than it was even 5 years ago. This is problematic. So working with other think tank leaders in Jakarta, Indonesia, Sweden, Honduras, all across the United States, and we've just been working together and collaborating. So it's been a sweet time.
Yeah, that's awesome, and that's encouraging. I hope that that's encouraging to you, Brooke. I know when we have the worldview that we have, whether we're talking as followers of Jesus Christ or as people that are patriotic Americans, but with our eyes wide open, we don't gloss over the nasty little dirty things about the history of this nation or any of its imperfections today, but we do love liberty and freedom. And that's encouraging to hear that we're not alone, and that there's people not only across the country, but across the world that see things similarly and just want to have a free society where we have a free exchange of ideas. That's super encouraging to me. I hope that's encouraging to you.
It is. I mean, I was sitting downstairs in the hotel lobby with some Canadians and Australians the other day, and we were just talking, you know, shooting the breeze in some ways, but also talking about serious things like energy policy and oil and energy security for Europe, you know, in the face of Russia's aggressions and what Ukrainians would call genocide. So, you know, there's a lot at stake right now. There always is, but especially right now, it's a somber time, but it's not a time to give up hope.
Amen. I second that notion, of course. So a great article in World Magazine. I just posted it again on Facebook. Can Elon Musk save social media? Seeking a healthy competitive landscape instead of heavy-handed government intervention. Great article, Brooke, and thank you for writing it. So your take, give us your take, and then we'll talk about it on the other side of the break, too. Just at first, when we first heard that Elon's complaining about Twitter while being on Twitter, and then he buys a 9.2% stake, and then after you wrote your article, he ends up on the board. So what's your first take on this? And then we'll talk about, because there's a lot of layers here to unpack.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so here for it. That's my first take. I am here for this. And I think a lot of people are. That's what we're seeing, the public reaction. Of course, not maybe some of the Twitter employee reactions, but right. The public reaction has been largely favorable, particularly among those that are center-right. But also, I would just say the younger audience that is on Twitter. I follow a lot of maybe more innovative thinking, but even they might be centrist or kind of center-left younger folks on Twitter, but they really respect Elon Musk. And so I think if anyone is not only financially equipped, but I would say just strategically in a position where they can wield influence and sort of kind of go toe-to-toe with some of the quote-unquote elites of the day, I think he might be a good fit for it. He's certainly a flawed individual like the rest of us, and I don't know much about his larger and broader worldviews, but he's an innovator, he's an entrepreneur, he's got money, but he also is willing to sort of take absurdities head on. He's gone after the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, multiple times on Twitter, and has kind of taunted them and landed himself in some legal water, so he's no stranger to sort of the government swooping in and attacking his own speech. Granted, that had to do with insider trading claims and things like that. But nonetheless, he's kind of in a unique position. So mm-hmm. I'm curious to see what he's going to do with that newfound power.
Yeah, he's such an interesting case study because, and you know, he's got a lot of views, and this is why he built SpaceX. One of the reasons he built SpaceX is because he's a firm believer that our environmental future is bleak at best, and so we got to find another planet to live on. He's hopeful it's Mars, and so he's out there on the left in some of his areas, but in some other areas, like with Twitter and free speech, and even governance, his challenge to the UN, he's like, hey, I'll pony up billions of dollars if I can track what you do with every single dollar of it. Then on the other side, so sometimes the right is cheering on Elon Musk, sometimes the left, which makes him, and I agree with you, really the perfect person to play this game, to step up and challenge not only what's going on with Twitter, but social media in general. Talking to Brooke Medina from John Locke Foundation, which is here in North Carolina, but also writing for World Magazine. She's out in California right now. Brooke, I'm going to put you on hold. We're picking up there when we come back. A lot to talk about. Can Elon Musk save social media? Goodness gracious, wouldn't that be nice? We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Yes, indeed. Monday through Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. via podcast, via Facebook Live, via YouTube Live. I'm happy to be your Bruce Lee. I'm happy to be in this fight every day of the week. For freedom, yes. For liberty, yes. Ultimately, for the sake of the gospel, to engage all these issues with a biblical worldview. And with an eye on the prize, which is to try to maintain a decent ambassadorship as a follower of Jesus Christ, so that we can bring the truth to bear with grace and then be a moral voice in a world that's consistently beginning trying to eliminate any notion of morality. By the way, like I was down at Shepherd's Church here in the North Carolina area in Cary, North Carolina, Stephen Davey, an incredible pastor, speaking to Solomon's Porch last night, which is a men's ministry they have. But every once in a while, twice a year, they'll open it up to wives and everybody else. And so they did that for me being there last night. And I was reminding them of truth and grace, and that ultimately the gospel is a moral solution to a moral problem, the moral problem being the violation of God's moral law. So the gospel, which satisfies justice, which is morality, is the deal. It's a moral law. It's a moral law and a moral satisfaction, a moral solution. So in the United States of America and around the world, and we're going to get Brooke Medina right back here, as we get down the road of just eliminating any notion of immorality. So if you tell somebody, your average kind of woke type person, post-Christian in America, that they need a savior, they need saving, because they don't really see a whole lot of immorality anymore, especially not in themselves, then they're like, why do I need a savior? So that's one of the roles that we have in loving our neighbors, is to be a beacon of truth spoken with grace. And that's what I do. That's why the Bruce Lee notion is on there. And I would say that Brooke Medina is also one of those Bruce Lee type folks out there trying to speak the truth into this dark, crazy world. But again, Brooke, thanks for calling in. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Steve. I've never been referred to as Bruce Lee, but thank you.
I got your back. Okay, so Elon Musk, what do you think is going to happen here? Because I know we've had this discussion before when you've been in the studio, and neither one of us is for really heavy-handed government tactics. A lot of times in this conversation, we're talking about Section 230, which is a 25-year-old law that kind of shields Facebook and Twitter. Are they a publisher? Can we yell free speech at these guys? If you're in trying to counsel Elon Musk as he's sitting in a board meeting at Twitter, Brooke, how would you handle that? Where do you hope he goes with this?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say first and foremost, I would advise him, and he is already well acquainted with this, free speech is messy, but so is private property rights. They are both, I would say, what's at play right now in this conversation. So one half of the conversation, especially those in our world on the kind of conservative side of things, is our ardent desire to protect speech rights and ensure that people's voices, especially reasonable voices that are saying things that we could have said easily 5 years ago, and people on the left would have said 5 years ago without anyone batting an eye. These are important to preserve. On the other hand, we also have another issue that we have to contend with, and that's private property rights and businesses. To what degree do businesses get to decide how people behave in their physical properties or their digital properties? I mean,
right.
So if we look at websites and platforms as digital homes or digital conference rooms, even, who gets say over those things? And this is kind of like the messiness, and there's not a clear, elegant solution, I would say, on the government front, which is why I make the argument that I would advise Elon Musk not to pursue government action. It's interesting, though, because Facebook, or aka Meta nowadays, Twitter, former CEO Jack Dorsey, as well as Google CEO, all seem very comfortable with government swooping in and starting to create these different regulations and give them guidance, which is interesting because they are willing to give up some of their liberties, these CEOs, in exchange for government giving guidance. Why is that? Well, I don't know why, but I have a good guess just knowing how oftentimes these actors work. And that's because if they are successful in getting the government to increase regulations around social media governance, terms of service, then they're probably going to be able to edge out their competitors because
right.
Their competitors cannot afford to hire staff to keep up with all of these regulations.
Well, and that happened with the PPP money back with COVID, and COVID also as part of this conversation when you're labeling things misinformation, disinformation, when you know that in order to have freedom or even to have science, then you have to be willing and able to kind of challenge everything. It's, well, here's my hypothesis. Okay, well, here's my hypothesis. And then we test them against each other. They didn't even allow that. But it's such an important point because when I'm teaching students every week, Brooke, we bring this up and people are like, yeah, free speech. I'm like, well, okay, hold on a second. Do you want a store? You guys are probably too young to remember the signs that said no shoes, no shirt, no service. Are you telling me a store doesn't have a right to run itself the way it wants to? Do you really think that you can demand free speech when you're at Twitter? They don't have to give it to you. You don't have to be there. You can go somewhere else, but we know that it's so influential at this point. So is there any room in this conversation, some might call it common sense, Brooke, when you go, well, these things are Twitter's so influential, it's so important, it's a big part of the social media culture that actually we should be able to enforce what we would generally think of as public free speech rights, even though it's basically a quote-unquote private held business.
Yeah, no, I think that this is where, and I recommend this again in the op-ed, is that we need more competitive social media platforms that are viable.
Yep.
And this is why I think Elon Musk is uniquely situated to provide such a thing, whether it's in Twitter or an entirely new social media platform. So what I would recommend is that the market continue to allow innovations on this front, which means that people are actually going to need to be vigilant against the Metas and Googles of the world,
yeah,
sending lobbyists to D.C., trying to lobby for more internet regulation. And so what I would say is we need more social media platforms to come to market. And those ones are still going to have their own terms of service, I would
yeah
imagine, if anyone is actually going to want to hang out on them. Because we don't want, like, gratuitous violence readily visible.
Sure.
Or horrible, like, violent pornography. Like, those are things that most people do not go on social media seeking those out.
Right.
And so there has to be some terms of service. Even Truth Social, Trump's social media service, has terms of service, and they're actually really long. I've read them. And so it's just common sense to have that, but we don't need ones that are so far to the left that you can't even say a man is a man and a woman is a woman.
Right, right. Yeah, because that'll get you in Twitter jail these days. And yeah, and to tie off that point about the PPP dollars, most of that went to larger businesses because in order to comply and understand all the rules and regulations, you have to have staff to be able to handle that. So that's a great point, and I appreciate you making that, that these big social media companies already have the people that, go ahead, government, provide all kinds of a regulation, because we're the only ones that can afford to hire the people, or already have the people that can make sure we comply with that. Anybody else trying to enter the market, you can't even afford to comply. So you lock everybody out. So we got to be really careful. It all depends on whose ox is getting gored when it comes to government intervention. Can Elon Musk save social media? I've got the links up for World Magazine. Brooke Medina, as always, excellent work. Thank you for being on, sis. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, we'll talk soon. That was Brooke Medina, John Locke Foundation here in North Carolina, and then also writing for World Magazine. Great talent, great woman of God, a good friend of the program, and we appreciate her wisdom. When we come back, I'm going to help you get more wise or woke. A little Steely Dan to chill out here at the end of yet another kind of dark and crazy week. Let's make sure we're all continuing to pray. Welcome back, by the way. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, thestevenobleshow.com. We're the podcast every day is wherever you get your podcasts. We're all over the place there. Plus, you can do Facebook Live or YouTube Live and be right here in the studio with our really groovy rainbow flag Mickey Mouse ears behind us on the screen. And then the back wall bathed in pink, as I turn the corner to discuss some more stuff of what's going on at Disney. And people have been saying, and as this stuff gets posted online, people are saying, hey, Disney, they're pedophiles for years. I've known this for years. God showed me 30 years ago that Disney's totally given over, blah, 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 blah. And you see all these symbolisms and the movies and the characters, and the characters are all about this, that, and the other thing. Okay, I'm still not easily persuaded to go down some of these, what I would call conspiracy like thinking. Okay. No offense if that's you. But for me personally, we see what we want to see. Okay. We all have confirmation bias. We all struggle with intellectual honesty. Okay. Because we just are so passionate about the way we see the world. Some of those things to some extent may be true in the past, but Disney is at a whole new level. And this stuff, Christopher Rufo, who's doing great investigative journalism, so somehow he's got some contacts inside Disney that they're grabbing the video of these inside the Disney imagining their future conversations, like these giant massive Zoom meetings they're having, which is all LGBTQIA plus. And now this has become corporate policy. We're going to change characters. We're changing directions. It's a full embrace of this sexual deviant gender anarchy, which takes you right to the garden. So you know who the architect of that is. That's right from Satan himself. And they're just all embracing it, all in the open. And that's this it. So I posted these videos. Christopher Rufo got these. I'm going to take you through these. They're each kind of short. Okay. So we'll start with this one. We're going to start with the biromantic asexual. And you're going to hear some terms and some phrases here. These are people that work in Disney, high up. You're going to hear some phrases here that I'm going to help you understand what you're listening to, okay? But here's the first one, the biromantic asexual. All right, go.
Yeah, I identify as like a biromantic asexual. I've had a lot of learning and growing about myself this year, kind of facilitated by how comfortable I felt on the Proud Family and with my immediate team at Disney TVA. And so it's just sort of like this creative dissonance between my personal experience where I feel so safe and so supported. I mean, like, I wasn't, like, in the closet, but, like, I'm real out now. But, like, and outside of my team, outside of TVA, it's just, it feels like the things that we believe that we're trying to put into the shows are not what we're seeing in the real world. And, yeah, it leaves you in a weird space. I'm still thinking, I want to use my content to, like, go deeper, like,
she wants to use her content to go deeper, like more gay, more trans, more everything. Okay, so she's like, I'm not seeing it out there in the real world. She's talking about Disney TVA. Get ready with the next one. Disney TVA, which is Walt Disney Television Animation. Okay, Walt Disney Television Animation. So all their animated shows, that's Disney TVA. She's saying that I'm a biromantic asexual. That means I can be in relationships with all kinds of people, people of my gender, people of the other gender. Male, female, not necessarily romantic, sometimes not. So I'm a biromantic asexual, and boy, it's we're doing a lot of stuff in here, but I don't see it out there in the real world. And I've got some more to say about that. Okay, so that's the first. This is a Disney employee who works with Disney Television Animation, completely out there and talking about, hey man, we just got to keep increasing basically all the content on Disney Animation on television. To make, I guess, the real world look more like their deviant world and messed up thinking and deep psychological problems. Okay? So that's the first one. Let's go to Black Queer Trans. This is another Disney employee. Okay. This is from Reimagine Tomorrow, which is the name of this Disney series that they're doing. Christopher Rufo, the investigative journalist, pulling all this out. Okay, let's play this one. Black Queer Trans.
Well, one, I'm an emotional person, so there's always a fear of crying in public, but I've just decided to accept that this is who I am. But in addition to that, you know, the fact of, like, how painful this has been, and as a Black person, as a Black queer person, as a Black queer and trans person, you know, to do the work of holding the company accountable means unpacking my own pain for somebody else to learn. Mm. And that is really hard to do without knowing that it's going to get better. And so if I'm going to continue to do this and continue to show up and kind of lay myself bare for the benefit of my colleagues and our leadership, I want to know that something is going to be done about it so that I don't feel this way anymore and so that we don't feel.
So I don't feel this way anymore so that we don't feel this way anymore, which is a phrase I picked up a week ago called malignant narcissism. I'm not denying that this young lady who identifies as Black, queer, and trans, that her experiences aren't valuable because they are. She's been through pain. She's been through rejection, all that stuff that matters. It should matter to you as a Christian. It matters to the Lord. The reasons behind it is another subject. But the fact that she feels pain in a broken world and she herself is obviously broken matters. That should touch your heart if you're a Christian. But like the whole world owes it to her, Disney owes it to her to then make all this right. That's malignant narcissism. It's all about her. At the expense of what? At the expense of taking kindergarten through third graders and teaching them all about these sexually deviant, messed up worldviews, which is exactly what DeSantis and the Florida legislature is fighting back against. That's why they hate the Florida legislature and DeSantis. Because he's saying, no, I'm sorry, this is not normal. This is not healthy. This is not good. And especially don't need to be dumping all this stuff into kindergarten through third graders. Disney wants to do it as it's becoming their profile, their corporate MO. Okay, so let's go to this one. This is a guy that's talking about gender expression. And listen to this phrase, gender affirmation procedures. Okay, supporting this via Disney. Go.
The other big area is gender identity and expression. So doing all of this work to ensure that our employees and cast can express their gender here authentically and proudly at the company. So, you know, coming up with guides on how to change your photo, information about pronouns, working with our benefits team to give information about gender affirmation procedures, both for our employees who are transitioning and trans, but also our employees who have kids who are transitioning.
Okay, that harkens back to what Biden was saying the other day in transgender special day or whatever it is. Every day is a special day, apparently. So benefits, talking about benefits for employees and kids, gender affirmation procedures. Okay, let me tell you what those are. Because I have a friend for years, Walt Heyer's been on the show many times. He went through sex reassignment surgery, then as much undone as he could, below the belt and above the belt. So let's say you have a 14-year-old son and you work at Disney. It looks like Disney's going in the direction where they have a part of their health care benefits is they're going to help pay for your son's gender affirmation procedures, which would include eliminating all the regular plumbing underneath the belt and up above when a man goes through this because he wants to go all in with being a trans woman. That's a man that believes he should be a woman. Then they get breast implants up above. Okay, so now Disney's talking about that's part of the benefits package. That's what Joe Biden was talking about just the other day, that he would like to see the federal government go down that road. And as disturbing as that is with women, then they're going to get testosterone treatments and a double mastectomy. There's a story of a 13-year-old girl had a double mastectomy because her parents bought into the transgender thing, gender dysphoria, and said, well, the thing we need to do, according to the president of the United States, because this is what he said last week, the most loving thing a parent can do is affirm their child's identity. And then if you really love your kid, then you're going to figure out a way to pay for having your 13-year-old daughter get a double mastectomy so that she looks more like a boy since that's what she is. The emperor has no clothes, and now you got the federal government wants to fund it. And that's what they're talking about at Disney. And now here's the one of the high-up corporate execs. We heard her video last week talking about nobody stopped us. She's talking about her former employee and then targeting Gen Z and millennials. There's a number you're going to hear in here, and then I'll talk about it on the other side of the break. Go.
Freeform. It was very much in the brand ethos of Freeform to be the tip of the spear when it comes to inclusion. And we, like you, LaToya, I mean, we jumped up and down, we celebrated that. Nobody stopped us. And it felt great. And in part, I think nobody stopped us because we were, you know, we were targeting Gen Z and millennials. We were targeting a younger, I think, more open-minded. And now we know, you know, as my son texted me this morning, you know, Gen Z is 30 to 40% queerer than the other generation's mom. So Disney better get with it.
Okay, so now Disney policy is it being affected by she's a high up Disney exec. And she said in her previous video that got leaked out by Christopher Rufo that both her kids, one is trans and the other one is queer, gay. And so now they're telling, hey, my generation's 30 to 40% queerer than your generation, so Disney better get with it. And in that statement, and with some other stats I'll share with you on the other side of the break, I'm going to tell you, it doesn't matter how many people cancel Disney Plus, it doesn't matter how many people stop going to the Disney theme parks, I believe that they're doing this for virtue signaling, that the CEO is being held hostage by this malignant narcissism. But from a money standpoint, we're going to hurt them by canceling Disney Plus and all that stuff and hurting their stock. I'm telling you, they think they're making a great financial move, and I'm going to explain that on the other side of the break. If you think it's dark, I'll make it darker. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Twilight Zone. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. And, you know, it's snarky, and yeah, I know, and sometimes I struggle with being super snarky about this stuff because it's just so ridiculous. And on another level, it's disgusting. It's dark. It's degenerate. It's debaucherous. It's just so whacked out in so many different ways as we're talking through what's going on with Disney and all the LGBTQIA++++++. Full bore. No stops, pedal to the metal corporate policy of this company that Walt Disney himself, I just would have a heart attack, I would imagine. I'll share a quote from Walt Disney before we finish today about what's happening here. So you have all these people talking about gender expression, gender affirmation procedures, black, queer, trans. I'll take you through some terminology to help you get more woke. And then targeting Gen Z, because remember, Gen Z, but pretty much 15 to 25-year-olds, somewhere in that range. In America now, about 30% of them are saying, yeah, I'm LGBTQIA++, somewhere in that continuum. And that's virtue signaling stuff. That's kind of telling the whole world, I'll be whoever I want to be. Thank you very much. Very similar to what happened in the 1960s. And there's no shame anymore, so there's no problem in just identifying. Yeah, I'm pansexual. Yeah, I'm queer. I'm this. I'm that. Because that means you're kind of woke. You're kind of open. And you're not shackled by the moral restraints of the past. Which makes you a 21st century Renaissance man or woman or pansexual or whatever you are, right? So that's all virtue signaling, trying to make yourself feel like a great person because you know you're not. Because in your DNA is the image of God. And so everybody knows he exists. Romans chapter 1. I always go back to Romans chapter 1, okay? So here's the CEO of Disney. And in this, now he's reading his. You can tell this was written for him. And you can tell he's reading a teleprompter, even though he's sitting in his office or whatever. And he's addressing this whole crowd in this big Reimagine Tomorrow thing, which is where all their LGBTQ radical stuff is coming out of Disney. And you can just tell he's just a groveling, pandering, virtue signaling CEO who's being held hostage by malignant narcissism. It's all about me, all about my feelings, all about me being mad about the culture that rejects me or makes fun of me or whatever. Me, 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 me. And they're all on board. But I'm telling you, I think they're making a financial investment as well. And I'll explain that here in a second. Okay, here's the CEO of Disney. Go.
Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day for this very important session. By now, I hope you've all read my most recent note, in which I pledge to be a better ally for the LGBTQ+ community, apologize for not being the ally that you needed me to be, and committed to ensuring that our company lives up to its values. I meant every word, and that's what we're here to talk about today.
Pandering.
I know that we've got work to do, and that work starts with listening.
Really bad actor.
I'm glad the company will hear from today's panel of LGBTQ+ employees, and I hope that you are as impacted as I've been by the voices that I've heard over the past few weeks. I've read many emails that have been sent, spoken with LGBTQ+ employees and their allies, met with advocacy groups, and convened my own leadership team. And I have been taken by the honesty, the openness, and the urgency of their stories. I want you to know that your words have made a real impact on me. I understand that we've made mistakes and the pain that those mistakes have caused. And I know that our silence wasn't just about the bill in Florida, but about every time an individual or institution that should have stood up for this community did not. I and the leadership team are determined to use this moment as a catalyst for more meaningful and lasting change. We've heard many suggestions on how to do that, and we are working to move quickly. I want to thank the LGBTQIA+ Advisory Council, their allies, and everyone else who has submitted ideas on how we can take action. I am convening a meeting with all my direct reports and representatives of the Advisory Council to discuss the thoughtful suggestions that have been made. But we know the moment requires urgency and words are not enough. So we are taking some actions right now.
Wow. That sounds like somebody that's being held hostage by radical Muslim extremists, and they're forcing him to read something. That's what that sounds like to me. That's why I called it a groveling, pandering, virtue signaling CEO held hostage by malignant narcissism. That's why I called it that. So I'm meeting with all you guys, LGBTQIA, that's intersex and asexual, plus. And I'm meeting with my leadership team, all my directs, that's all the highest people in the company. I can tell you who he's not going to meet with. He's not going to meet with decent, normal, traditional parents, even though they pay 95% of Disney's bills. They're not going to meet with you, me, forget it. Now, why? Why? Is there a moral component that a lot of these people think that this makes Disney more in line with Walt Disney? And he cares about children deeply, loved imagination, Walt Disney just all in, wanting to care for children, and just loved the whole process. Okay, that's Walt Disney. And you just go, okay, so do they believe they're carrying that on? That's what they're doing? So it's a moral thing? We're helping children? That's what they believe. I guarantee you they believe they're helping children by indoctrinating them in their twisted worldview. Okay, because misery loves company. And so if you can get enough people to agree with you that what you know in your bones, because you're made in the image of God and you have a conscience, is off somehow, we can drown that out if we get enough people to agree with us. Does that make sense? And so that's what's going on there. But now we know that Disney is losing stock price. Disney is losing Disney Plus subscribers, and it could be a big hit. Okay, it could be a big hit for them. And so they go, well, sooner or later, with this boycott, we'll drive them into the ground, and they'll have to change. I don't think that's going to work. I think what they're betting on is they really believe right now, where you've got this Gen Z is 30% LGBTQIA plus, that's the future. If 30% of Gen Z is identifying that way, they're Disney's future customer base, not us old, white, traditional, hateful, homophobic, transphobic Neanderthals, not us. We're going to be dead. So to Emily's point on Facebook Live, why pander to the minute minority? Because they believe that they'll be the majority one day. Because they're looking at Gen Zs right now going, well, 30% of them identify as LGBTQ something in one way or another. But most of them aren't living that out. You think a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, an 18-year-old really knows who they are? No, a lot of them are going to grow out of that stuff. Because it's all the rage right now. That's how you signal to everybody that you have virtue. That's what it means to be woke. So right now, I think they're thinking it's kind of like AOC and all the environmental people thinking, well, if we get gas to $9 a gallon, there's going to be all kinds of pain. But once we get over to the Green New Deal, we're going to save the earth. We're going to save all you. And then you're going to thank us for it. But we're buying into the future. This is the future that's going to save us. So I think Disney actually thinks the future of America and around the world is LGBTQ plus rules the world. And all the people like us, that's traditionalists, we're going to be dead and gone. So why pander to us? They're going to pander to the next generation because that's what they think the money is. So they think they're morally right. They think they're helping children. And that's where the money is. So cancel away. If that's what you feel like doing, I totally understand that. I'm not comfortable going to a Disney theme park right now. No way. It's just getting so crazy. Then there's Disney Plus. You got all these things. So I'm not going to judge anybody on that deal. I'm just telling you, my belief is nothing's going to change. It's only going to get worse. I think Disney will get to the point in our lifetime that a parade through Disney, the Magic Kingdom, will look a whole lot more like a gay pride parade than in San Francisco than it will the Disney parades of your youth. Or like when I was there in high school and marched with a marching band in a Disney parade. And you get all the Disney characters and all the little kids, and it's a beautiful scene, right? No, it's going to start to look a lot more like a San Francisco or Chicago or New York City gay pride parade. It'll get there. All right, I shared something, and God help them and us and the earth. This is why the gospel and us speaking the truth. It's not my job to save the world. It's not my job to save America. It's my job to be faithful with whatever opportunities the Lord gives me. That's your job too. So I'm going to continue to speak moral truth into the culture, because if the culture is successful at eliminating any notion of moral truth, then they have no interest in the gospel at that point, from a fleshly standpoint, from an intellectual standpoint. What do I need to be saved from? There's nothing about my lifestyle that's immoral. What's immoral is your level of judgment over there in the church. Does this make sense? This is perfectly clear to me. So that's when you sit there and go, what are these people talking about anyway? Biromantic, asexual, what's all that stuff? So I just shared on Facebook this enormous list. PFLAG's a real pro-homosexual, pro-LGBTQ organization that's in schools all across the country. Isn't that charming? So this is their national glossary of terms updated in January of last year. Starting with things like AFAB, AFAB, acronym meaning assigned female at birth, affirmed gender, an individual's true gender. Agender refers to a person who does not identify with or experience any gender. None whatsoever. You're a what? Pat? I don't know. Androgynous. AMAB, acronym meaning assigned male at birth, androgynous. Aromantic, we heard that one earlier from the Disney person. What's aromantic? Sometimes abbreviated as aro, pronounced aro, the term refers to an individual who does not experience romantic attraction. Aromantic people exist on the spectrum of romantic attraction and can use terms such as gay, aromantic, or gray romantic to describe their place within the spectrum. Aromantic people can experience sexual attraction, however. Then there's asexual. She also described herself as asexual. No, she said biromantic. Okay, I got to find that one. Asexual. Sometimes abbreviated as ace. The term refers to an individual who does not experience sexual attraction at all. Not buying that one. Biromantic, bicurious, bigender, BIPOC, binding, bioessentialism, biological sex, biphobia, bisexual, bottom surgery, butch, chosen family, cisgender, cisnormity, cissexism, closeted, coming out, culturally queer, dead naming, demiromantic, demisexual, demiboy, demigirl, disclosure, drag, so on and so on and so forth. This is a world that suppresses the truth and replaces it with a lie. And it's a world that needs Jesus, and it's a world that needs us to share the gospel as much as we can and to speak biblical moral truth, just to be a reminder that such a thing exists, for the hope that some will be saved. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.